Capital Radio 2 by The Clash. And that leads me right into my guest tonight, and that is Sandra Moore. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, how are you, Arnold?
Well, very good, thank you very much. And you've done something very exciting. You've made a film about radio, and of course that picks up our ears.
Absolutely, we've gotten a great reaction from the radio community. I think even though most of us have 3 or 4 radios at home, a lot of us take radio for granted. And as I looked into it more and more, radio has a very dramatic history, and I think the people that work in radio are really happy somebody is going to be telling that story.
Mm. Excellent. Yeah, history is so important. You know, it seems such a contemporaneous thing, radio, but it stretches back over 120 years, I suppose, now.
And the battles have been going on from day one. Tesla invented radio. He actually invented electricity, which he wanted to give away for free. But J.P. Morgan, his first investor, said, no way, buddy. And they blackballed Tesla, took over his inventions. Marconi ended up being the quote-unquote inventor of radio, and that was one of the first battles in broadcasting.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, we have the, just a few miles from our studio, is the Marconi Center, where Marconi did the first broadcast over the Pacific.
That's right, that's right. It was over there, and then he, of course, was working with Edison and got very popular over here, and then Marconi actually ended up hiring David Sarnoff, who was the president of RCA. And David Sarnoff and Marconi worked together to sort of out Armstrong, who invented FM radio. So there's been battles going on all along, and all of the history of radio is interestingly tied into Wall Street and making big money.
That, definitely want to hear those juicy bits. Now, what brings you into film, Sandra? You have your own production company. What other productions have you done, and what brought you into film?
I've been working in video and film production since I graduated from college with a Bachelor of Science in the field, and started out working at Nickelodeon Animation and those kind of things, and soon was, as so many of us out here in Hollywood, became an independent production company and really focused a lot on short-form trailers. Usually people hire me to put together something that's going to make you watch their movie or buy their product. And when the economy got very slow, it gave me a chance to do some of my own stuff. I had been hired by other companies to do documentaries. But this one was close to my heart, and I had a few months free, so put it together. And now it's just started its festival tour about a week and a half ago here in the United States.
Oh, fabulous. And where is the Radio Wars film going to be shown? Do you know so far?
Well, so far, when we entered the festivals as of a week and a half ago, we haven't heard back yet. If we're lucky, places like the Los Angeles International Film Festival and Sundance and those kind of things will respond well and decide to have a screening. But we're crossing fingers. Just entered, and I guess they have to have a chance to see the film and deem it worthy.
Often media people do like films about media. That's self-preening, I suppose.
You know, and it's so funny, one of the people that is in the movie is the inventor of satellite radio, who happens to be a transgender woman. And I've learned something from making a documentary. She's very wealthy, and she's very, very brilliant. Mm. And she actually invented satellite radio when she was a man. She was married to the same woman for the last 30 years, so now I guess that makes them both lesbians. And she is really brilliant. She has a pharmaceutical company now, so she's gone from the stars all the way back into the cellular level of science. And she actually placed the first order for Radio Wars, which is 500 DVDs. So I learned two things. One, if you want a successful movie, make it about the media. And two, put wealthy, intelligent people in it. So our first order was 500 DVDs, and we were happy to fill it. She got it out in time for Christmas and then gave us some extras to start putting into the festival.
Oh, great. What is her name? Who invented it?
Yeah, I should have mentioned Martine Rothblatt. And 30 years ago, she was known as Martin Rothblatt. And she is the one that put together the technology for satellite radio, which, of course, has been at war, in a sense, with terrestrial radio. For a long while there, the National Association of Broadcasters fought very hard for, certain limitations on satellite radio. And now satellite radio, after they just got comfortable, is going to have to deal with Internet radio.
Maybe explain, maybe people don't know really what satellite radio really means. You know, it seems like everything's flying around on satellites anyway. What makes this so satellite?
Okay, well, terrestrial radio, meaning earthbound broadcasting, has been the form of radio that most of us enjoyed through AM and FM, CB radio, that kind of thing, all our lives. About 10 or 15 years ago, Martin Rothblatt came up with the idea of launching satellites that would broadcast commercial free radio from space. And it's kind of nice if you drive long distances like a truck driver. You can actually keep your station from California all the way to New York. And with satellite radio, you never have to change your station. So what happened is at first it was a tough, tough sell. A lot of people didn't want to pay for radio. But this is very similar to the television wars that went on back in the 50s when there were commercials saying, don't let people make you pay for TV. Say no. Keep your free TV. And this is the same radio war that satellite went up against with terrestrial versus satellite radio. People in the terrestrial world were saying, we can't let this take off. People start paying for radio, why are they going to want to listen to commercials? So it's always about the money.
Interesting. Now, who owns the satellites that they're being broadcast from?
The satellites were originally, the FCC granted licenses for two companies, XM and Sirius, to both have satellites. They were pressured into doing this because the NAB basically wanted to make it a little harder for them to survive. And, of course, it's very expensive, billions of dollars to launch satellites. Yeah. After a while, when satellite radio nearly went out of business due to the cost, and of course, like, you know, the big bills with Howard Stern and the NFL and Oprah Winfrey, they merged, and now Sirius XM Satellite owns all of the satellite radio satellite systems for satellite radio.
So there's no competition, in other words, it's just one company.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you say no competition because when I see what's going on with iPhones in the car, and when we see, of course, AM and FM being free radio, and then iPods, even people broadcast, put together their own little personal stations that follow them everywhere, I think there's competition for every form of radio. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, this seems such a big ticket item to begin, and yet it somehow survived by the two largest ones by merging. So now your film spotlights that specific battle, doesn't it, between the two companies, between Sirius and XM and their merger?
We spotlight in Radio Wars the battle literally in the stars between Sirius and XM radio, because so much of what we learned about the radio wars throughout history really reared their ugly heads in this battle over satellite radio. There was Wall Street manipulation of stocks. There was underhanded propaganda, you know, machines to put in place trying to say it was un-American to have satellite radio and unconstitutional. Of course, there was no satellite radio when the Constitution was written, but that doesn't stop anybody. So what ended up happening, it was quite a surprise, but what ended up happening is that the satellite radio battle in Radio Wars really helped bring it all together, how the whole system works. And, you know, we show a little bit of how it works before and after, but the wars that we saw take place over ownership, over money, over control of the media and on control of the messages that get out to our culture, those things all really were so clear in the satellite radio war. So it ended up that the movie spent quite a bit of time talking about that particular story, because it truly was a phoenix that rose from the ashes, nearly clobbered by the battles that it had to be subjected to.
Interesting. Are there any satellite companies in other parts of the world, and what is the situation with them?
You know, there are companies in other parts of the world that have similar services. Clear Channel, of course, DirecTV, those places, those kind of companies here in the United States have their own version of satellite radio, I suppose. Not so much that it's broadcast in your car, but when you're at home, you can listen to the station you want via your television. And I haven't investigated a whole lot in Europe and some of the other countries outside of the United States, But I would suggest that radio wars are going on all over the world because those that control the messages and over the airwaves truly control the culture.
Yeah. Good point. And does SiriusXM do adverts, or is it just the subscription pays for it?
You know, they do have certain channels that are streaming what you would hear on TV, and it's one of my favorite parts of satellite radio is I can listen to CNBC Business Channel, or I can listen to Fox News, or I can listen to CNN, and those television channels have 2 minutes of advertising here and there. Well, when that happens, satellite doesn't go dead. They take advantage of the situation and they go ahead and just run their own ads. So it's not purely commercial-free, but they try to do their best to, at least for the music stations and that kind of thing, to make it almost uninterrupted. And it's actually a great service.
You know, we're controlled by the FCC. Where does the FCC come into satellite radio, and how was it involved during that battle?
Well, that is such a great question, and Radio Wars really goes into the huge battle that there was between Howard Stern, free speech, the FCC, licensing, terrestrial radio, National Association of Broadcasters. The FCC really wanted to keep control of things. Of course, satellite radio was going to be like HBO. It was spinning off away from, you know, CBS and all those things to be its own program entity, its own content delivery system. And whenever something like that happens, boy, it makes people nervous. And people that are in the established stations and that kind of thing get very nervous about losing listeners and advertising dollars. So the FCC was petitioned quite a bit. And satellite radio really had to fight to survive. They had to prove that people should be allowed to pay for radio. And here, cursing, if that's what they wanted to hear. Howard Stern started out as just a regular radio guy who was constantly fighting to express himself. And a lot of people are offended by the way he expresses himself. But, you know, the truth is that he does have a lot of people that really appreciate that he's very straightforward. Well, he was on terrestrial radio for a long time, and he was getting fined, and he was being attacked by the FCC for talking about things like sex and, you know, the night before with his wife and how exactly he did it. And so he decided, you know what, forget this. I'm going to go to satellite radio where I can say whatever I want. And there's about 10 minutes in the movie Radio Wars that shows that transition that he made and how it really saved satellite radio in a lot of ways and put satellite radio on the map. But where it also gave a real clear message out there that once again, in the United States, we value free speech. And I don't listen to Howard Stern, but I'm really glad that he's on the radio and he can do what he likes to do. We do have a part in Radio Wars that actually shows one of the very controversial things he said. And wow, when I was editing it, I was pretty shocked.
Going back in history, how did those FCC rules come into being way back when, and how have they changed, and what brought them on? What brought rules on to begin with?
Oh, gosh, you know, it's a pretty complex, broad subject that we explore a little bit, but not too much. One of the most difficult things in making a movie about the history of radio is that we don't want to lose our viewers to too much legal jargon and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But basically the idea was that the United States decided that it was very important that two things not occur. One, that no one entity was going to control all the ways that we heard radio. In other words, they didn't control all the messages that we heard. They didn't hear. They didn't, have some sort of monopoly over the kind of messaging that we hear. And the second was to make sure that it didn't become unacceptable to society what was played on the radio. And they felt like they needed to put, just like in the movies, they needed to put something together that was going to protect listeners who might just be a five-year-old boy stumbling upon a radio show from anything that was considered profane or, unacceptable. The other thing is that a lot of people don't know this, but in the 1920s, the Associated Press and newspapers were really the main way that people got their news. And when radio came along, suddenly it was a free a free access to news anytime without reading, without buying a newspaper. Right. And Associated Press fought for 10 years in court to establish their right to not share their news wires.
10 years?
10 years. Wow. To try to make sure radio didn't get the opportunity to carry news. So the FCC really had to be created in part to stand in and mediate some of these radio wars from the very early times.
Mm. Interesting. You know, were they classed as radio wars back then? Did they have certain names, or it just was sort of happening in the background? How did that present itself to the world?
Well, later, you know, the conflict that I just mentioned between the Associated Press news wires and the radio broadcast news, later they did get names. That particular battle was called the Press Radio War. Hmm. I think at the time they were just keeping their head above water and fighting to survive, and it wasn't until later that they actually recognized that there were huge battles, historic battles going on. You know, CBS and NBC were born out of that battle. Mm. That was why they broke off and became their own entity as a radio station, so that they could create their own news. And, you know, CBS and NBC now, and Associated Press, are all very strong independent entities today in the news.
The big companies, you know, we think of as TV companies, they really were all had humble radio beginnings.
Yeah, and really the only reason that they started really was, you know, when Associated Press was giving them so much trouble about the news, they said, okay, well, we're going to send our people out with recorders, and we're going to get our radio news separately, and it's going to be ours, and you can't do anything about it. And then they grew from that, and radio, of course, was much easier than picking up a newspaper. You could just turn it on and hear what was going on in the world. So it really took off. So CBS and NBC were almost overnight successes.
Mm. No, it's, you know, obviously over the years, radio has been counted out as dead, basically, on a number of different occasions. But it seems to somehow, despite bureaucracy, it keeps trying to reinvent itself, and it seems to be coming back stronger. Is that how you see it?
I see there always being some sort of radio. There's always going to be some sort of message going out over the airwaves, where a listener can not only participate, but in the future can be a big part of the medium. You know, we see Occupy Wall Street and Occupy This, and in the movie Radio Wars, we really go into occupying radio and the way that, you know, blog radio has taken off, and many, many people have internet radio stations that are very popular and very powerful and lead to many other huge successes in their, you know, future careers. Mm. So the 99% has really been given the 99% has really been given a new power when it comes to radio. So yes, I think you're absolutely right. It does seem to keep reinventing itself. It's got more than nine lives. You know, it's on its way to its next transformation. And, you know, we in the movie Radio Wars, we interviewed the very first ever virtual DJ at her very first ever show. She talked to us, and she said, "It is not my intention to create a radio war." And I thought, "Oh God, we're in the future now."
What's her favorite band?
Oh, you know, she likes hip hop and she likes R&B. So, you know, it has something to do with her programmer, I'm sure.
I imagine.
Yeah, but she can, you know, in 20 years from now, who knows? Maybe she'll be able to ad lib and joke, and
maybe not that long even.
Maybe not that long. So Radio Wars goes, you know, everything from the very first time we did Morse code, as Mark, you know, Marconi did over the Pacific, Atlantic, excuse me, all the way over up until the radio that's happening now, that's under our personal control, where we can reach thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people through the internet and through our own creation.
Being human, is still the same things are coming out. Is anything really new come out, you know, apart from shock jocks? Have we spawned anything new lately on radio, or are we really still doing the same formats and things as they've always done?
Yeah, I think it's sort of like the ocean. You know, it's not one wave and it's not one change in the season. It's just this sort of malleable thing that's constantly moving, and we may not even notice it from here to there, but slowly but surely new forms of radio are being born, I went to a 2012 convention recently and talked to George Norrie, who's a great radio guy. And at the convention, they were talking about nanosatellites and how we will have personal satellites that go up to space and that won't be that expensive. And these personal satellites will hold our information, our documents, kind of like a Google Cloud. But they'll also allow us to transmit and receive messages so that we're becoming more and more like the, you know, it's just becoming more and more like we're creating the nervous system of humanity, as Martine Rothblatt puts it in the movie.
Very good point. I hadn't heard about that that movement. Nanosatellites, I love it.
That'll be good for your next show.
Definitely.
Nanosatellites, are they dangerous?
I'm gonna carry an umbrella with me all the time now, just in case they come down.
Oh, yeah. The whole discussion of what the future of, especially if you talk to someone like Martine Rothblatt, who's real visionary, you know, it's just overwhelming. Wow, you know, just that we'll be able to, even in our contact lenses, have certain transmitted information that we can manipulate and use and put to our, you know, put to our benefit.
Martine, was she an engineer when she invented it, or just sort of somehow pulled all the pieces together? How did that work with her pulling the satellite together?
She was working near the NASA tracking station in another country, Kenya. Hmm. She was in Kenya working at the NASA tracking station, and she has a background in all of this kind of technology. But it's so interesting to me that, you know, when her daughter got sick with a terminal illness, really, she dropped everything and pretty much went to work on how to save her daughter, and her daughter's still alive today, by starting a pharmaceutical research company. And really fascinating, you know, that she could shift gears like that without any real training. I'm sure she got it eventually, but she was definitely educated and has a doctorate and a lot of experience in working with technology in space.
Often, as you touched on earlier, that there was the battle about who did invent radio or who did invent TV. It seems different countries always put up their own heroes who have done that, and without regard to actual facts sometimes.
Right.
So has anybody else challenged her, or is definitely Martine's was the sole inventor per se?
I look into that quite a bit, because most inventors have had their fair share of struggles, and I didn't find any conflicting evidence to the contrary. So I did quite a bit of research over a bit of time looking for anybody else that might take credit for that invention, and that she's it. She's it, and, you know, it is funny, though, throughout history, though, there are always these battles. These battles that go on over ownership of an invention. I know Edison supposedly made the first audio recording with Mary Had a Little Lamb, but I found out about 2 months into doing the movie that actually a person in France recorded, believe it or not, an audio signal onto paper. Onto paper.
Oh, my goodness.
And that paper was played recently. It was actually called Clair de Lune. And, it's in the beginning of the movie. As the movie opens and we see the opening credits, you hear that recording.
Oh, my goodness. Paper.
So watch Radio Wars. If you go to RadioWars.com, you can get the movie.
Indeed. And we're talking to Sandra Moore, who has produced this new film called Radio Wars. And it is coming out this year, 2012, to a film festival near you. Now, going to the whole XM battle, you said it, you know, it got involved in a lot of lawyers and basically, I'm sure, millions and millions of dollars of battle. Who are the main players behind that, behind all that happening? Who is pushing the various parts on that?
Well, if the FCC is looked at as sort of, I guess, a mediator or a referee, or maybe, I guess you could say, an entity that is going to enforce certain standards, the people that behind it that were really creating the question and the conflict of who should be doing what were the National Association of Broadcasters and you know, the people that wanted to create satellite radio. the National Association of Broadcasters has been known to really want to stick with what is currently happening and not really being very friendly and very open to change. You know, they even fought FM for a long time.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so, and then when FM ended up working out okay, satellite radio came along, and then yeah, we have commercials in Radio Wars that show, you know, really trying hard to get people to write their congressmen and that kind of thing and say, no pay radio. Really, it's all about money.
Yeah. I mean, is XM Sirius making money now? How's it doing?
Well, it's really interesting in the movie, and this is, again, back to the idea of Occupy Radio. There are about 20 million subscribers to satellite radio who pay every month for the service, and they love the service. They're like Trekkies. They're like, they're just, you know what I mean by Trekkies? They're just crazy fans that love it. They're just loyal. They love their radio, their satellite radio. So 1 million of those 20 million are actually invested in the company. They own stock.
Oh.
Now, when Wall Street and the National Association of Broadcasters sort of started to see each other as possible allies, Sirius stock was targeted, and this is explained in the movie, in a way that pushed the stock down from its high of about $9 a share all the way down to 5 cents a share. And this is only 2.5 years ago. So what happened was that these avid fans, these loyal members of the satellite radio community that were losing their shirts, literally millions of dollars, some of them in the movie lost millions, got together and decided to fight Wall Street and fight the NAB. And in the movie, we see how they won that battle. And they took back their radio and they took back their stock, and it swung up now over 3,000% higher than it was 2.5 years ago, and it's on its way back up. And yes, the company is profitable. If nothing else, I think Radio Wars not only gives you a little history lesson, or gives the viewer a history lesson in the different radio wars that have gone throughout history, but also the viewer's going to walk away with an understanding of how Wall Street can help manipulate these things, and they will walk all over the individual private investor if it means that they can make millions at the end of the day. And that's what they tried to do with Sirius stock, and they didn't get away with it.
And it took Trekkie-like people, people with passion about it, to defeat them then.
Passion and a little desperation. You know, when you've lost that much money, it's all of a sudden it becomes like top of the list of things to do today.
Yeah, I haven't got anything left to lose, so might as well.
Right, and you know, people had faith in the company because they knew the service was so good, and because there were 20 million subscribers. You know, the future was bright. So how could stock with making $3 billion, a company making $3 billion per year, could they be trading at 5 cents a share, right?
That's a good point. That must be pretty unusual, I would say.
Yeah, it does. It happens. And so you'll learn about naked short selling and how that works. We do it with cartoons. It's pretty easy. Don't be scared.
Yeah. Now, people have seen their success. Are there any others maybe wanting to emulate them now? Anybody else stepping into the satellite radio world?
I haven't seen anybody else. You know, it was so tough for the two companies to make it separately, and now that they've merged, it would take a real powerhouse to cover the bases that they have. They've really got got the talent. You've got lots and lots of talent. You know, they've got Oprah. They've got Martha Stewart and NFL and the
Major League MLB.
Yeah, a huge baseball fan. And you know, they've got all these contracts, so they're pretty set in terms of content. And I think in a lot of ways that really would be the main thing I think will play a part in the future of radio, and that's content. People don't want to sit through commercials anymore. They don't want to sit through stuff that they don't want to hear. They want the choice to listen to what they want when they want to. And the people that bring the content are going to be the stations and the radio broadcasts that do the best.
Oh, interesting, yeah. Now, you mentioned a few radio wars over the years, you know, going obviously back to Tesla and Edison and Westinghouse. What other ones major ones have occurred over the years?
Well, David Armstrong invented FM radio, and he was actually put up in the Empire State Building, at the top of the Empire State Building, for a long time to do his experiments by RCA's David Sarnoff, who was the former employee of Marconi. And when David Sarnoff saw that FM was going to be far and beyond superior to the AM that he was controlling, he decided to stop all the experiments, close down the office, and David Sarnoff was kind of out of luck. And David Sarnoff decided he would go out on his own and take his FM with him. But what happened was, I'm sorry, Armstrong was saying that, but David Sarnoff said to himself, well, I'm not going to use your FM. I'm going to get the FCC to change what is acceptable for FM. No longer will they use your frequencies. We're going to use a couple notches up from yours. So it was pulled out from under, I'm sorry, Edward Armstrong. I was getting names mixed up. It was pulled out, the rug was pulled out from under Armstrong's feet, and he actually ended up throwing himself out of a window over it.
Oh, my goodness. What year was that?
That was in the 1940s, 50s.
Mm.
So he ended up, he fought and fought and fought in court with Sarnoff, and he finally just gave up. He was a beaten man. He'd lost everything. He put on his best suit, his cufflinks, and walked out of his window of his office.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
dear.
So, you know, there are several stories in the movie Radio Wars, and some are tragic and some are uplifting.
Mm. Oh, fascinating. And what brought you to that? Did I ask you what brought you to that subject originally? What made it jump out at you? Were you getting involved in it just from the news, or how did the subject hit you?
Well, one day I looked at my stock in Sirius, and I was shocked to see it was going down to 11. It was at 11 cents a share that day.
Okay.
And I thought, there's something wrong here. So I started to look into it, and sure enough, there was something wrong. There was something going on. And then I realized, well, not only is this a story, this has been going on throughout history. And so the impetus behind my doing the movie was an interest in saving my own stock. Mm. As shallow as that sounds. I wanted to expose, you know, this what was going on. They say, you know, criminal behavior can't stand the spotlight, right? So
right.
I wanted to shine a spotlight on it. And that turned into a bigger and bigger project until it was as if the documentary was telling me the story, and I was just editing as fast as I could.
Wow. More and more information just piled in there, I'm sure.
It all wanted to be told. And there's more and more, too. I think someday somebody's going to have to do one just on the AM-FM effect on the culture. You know, just the brilliant experience that so many people had when FM came into being, and they had their rock stations and the different type of DJs and that whole period of history. I think someday someone should do something about that. That's exciting. I couldn't go into it too much in the movie because it's its own story, but you know, it played a big part here in the United States, of course, and in the youth culture.
Oh, absolutely. And obviously FM has transformed from that point, obviously, what people first thought, or how it was first utilized, obviously, is quite different now, obviously, how it's being utilized.
Yeah, when it started, it was only for the wealthy, and it was considered like dinner music because it was higher quality. It was kind of like CDs when they came out. Only the wealthy had CDs players, right? And when FM came out, it was sort of that way. They actually didn't know that they could make money off of it because they were selling it to the wealthy as sort of like a sophisticated form of radio, but they didn't see the potential for it until much later. Yeah, we might see internet radio do that same thing. I remember maybe 3 years ago, people kind of scoffed at internet radio. Oh, you know, that's no big deal. And now it's a real contender.
Yeah.
It's all expanding, sort of like the universe. I'm just wondering where it ends. It probably won't. It'll probably just keep expanding in ways that we can't even imagine.
Well, I hope so. I mean, that's the inventiveness of humans, isn't it? Coming up with something new that is nice and shiny, and we all want one.
Right.
I think Steve Jobs proved that.
Innovation, always on the human agenda.
Exactly. And you've tried to encapsulate that in Radio Wars, your new film. And why didn't you tell us how people can learn about it and what's happening with it?
Sure. Well, pretty soon here, there'll be new information on our website, RadioWars.com, that addresses where it's going to be shown across the country in festival tours. So RadioWars.com, we do have a special screener available for people that want to see the movie early. It's not a public screener in terms of being distributed. And on RadioWars.com, there's also a description of the different people that are in the movie, and we'll hopefully very soon, I would say in about a week and a half, we'll have a calendar of where it's going to be showing in your city.
Well, I certainly recommend everyone to go and see it when it comes around. It sounds fascinating. And how long is the film? It's a full-length documentary?
This is a 96-minute documentary.
Oh, that's a serious piece of work.
It's full-length. It probably could have been 3 hours, but nobody wants that.
That's great. I really appreciate you doing the film and bringing radio so important. We believe it here. We're very passionate about it. And
all right. Well, thank you for what you do as well, and Happy New Year.